This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Fine Dining Podcast. Caroline, do you like to dine finely?
I do, because it rhymes with my name.
Caroline, dine fine, drinking water, drinking wine.
With Diane Feinstein.
With Diane Feinstein. RIP. Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all the chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5 out of 10 dining experience. The objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good, which if you listen to this podcast, you're very familiar with the concept.
With a 5 out of 10 experience.
And bad maybe becoming good as God saves us. Recently, featured guests include Marissa Pinson and John Glover as they review Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many hot dogs could fit in their mouths. And today, his IHOP episode dropped. So right now, head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast and click Bee's Giveaway to enter for an all-expenses-paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current frontrunner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at a 5.02 out of 10 for you and three of your friends. And you can watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Caroline, who would you take?
Oh my gosh, if I got a table for four at Applebee's.
Yeah.
Obviously, love of my life, Nathan, gonna be there.
My fingers are crossing.
Who likes chain restaurants?
I'm getting a nosebleed.
Probably my friend Jeremy. Okay.
I know him.
That leaves one more. Let me ask you a question, Kevin.
Yeah.
If you were gonna order an Applebee's right now, what would you get?
I'd get a fried onion if they had it.
All right, you're in.
So okay.
As long as we can share.
Hell yeah. Listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th Chipotle episode. That's linktree.com/finediningpodcast. It's the hunt for the worst Christian song of all time. For the first time in 2021. Today on Good Christian Fun.
We did it. We did it.
Consider the source.
It's all about jacking up.
Everything.
Consider the source.
Wanna get in the bathtub?
Consider the source.
It's all about jacking up.
Consider the source.
Something's correct.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
No hell below us.
Above the lonely sky. Oh,
imagine all the people.
James Marsden, okay.
Living for today.
All right. Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I'm Caroline, and I'm imagining a better year.
Do you know how soon into quarantine they put that out? It was
It was like 1 week.
It was 6 days.
The foresight they had to know that we would need that.
I just watched Wonder Woman 1984 last night, so I had Gal on the mind. Wonder Woman, an imagined video of a film.
Would say it didn't transcend?
It did not transcend, our friend Natalie Walker sometimes says. Wonder Woman 1984, a movie in which they said, hey, you know what we should do? We should send Gal Gadot to the Middle East in this summer popcorn movie and just kind of play around with that stuff. Yeah. See what sticks. It might be fun. Definitely not any strange connotations or subtext there at all.
No, and I feel like she's always risen above any sort of conflict in that area.
She's transcended.
She has transcended.
Good Christian Fun is the podcast where we talk about Christian pop culture, the movies, the music, and the entertainment made for, made by, sometimes made about Christians. Like last week, Yes, God, Yes. That was a movie about Christianity. And
by
Christian
at least a former Christian Catholic.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that a hyphen? It's like a writer, performer, Christian Catholic, singer, songwriter. But we're not here to make fun of you. or to make you go to church. That's how I'm emphasizing it now. We're not here to make fun of you or to make you go to church.
We don't even know you.
We don't, but we'd like to for just $5 a month at patreon.com/goodchristian. What a disgusto plug.
Okay.
It's there.
We're making money.
Hey, you know, I've turned around about the idea of charging for accessibility in 2021.
That's right. Yeah, this is big for Kevin.
As we discuss, well, Caroline and I had a discussion off mic years ago about the morality of charging for meet and greets after live shows. And apparently I had a pretty...
Specifically for podcasts.
What's that? Oh, it was before we had a podcast together.
No, specifically for podcasts.
Oh, yes,
doing
yes,
a
yes.
meet and greet, yeah.
And there's a lot of complicated factors to it. That said, whatever I say on this podcast, hold it me to it forever. Please hold my feet to the fire.
It all comes around to you agreeing with me eventually.
Because the number one problem in this country is a lack of personal responsibility and accountability. That's by far the number one problem.
I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
How did you feel when the plane disappeared in Wonder Woman 1984?
I don't know where this is going. I felt okay.
I'm just asking. No, it's not a trick question.
I feel like this feels like a classic setup to a punchline. I felt fine about it. I don't know. It was like in the invisible jet. There it is.
I felt nothing.
Wow.
That's sad. Anyway, that's all.
It is so funny to match up Chris Pine with Gal Gadot, to match up this like genuinely fireball of charisma man with the modern day equivalent of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, she has charisma. She just not acting wise.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Oh, but come on, we're not here to wonder about a woman. We're here to sing about the God of Wonders in effortless segues.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're kicking it off. It's our first episode with a guest this year. It's 2021 already as of recording this, from the events that have occurred this week as of recording this, 2021, a whiz bang start. Yeah. Yeah. And everything that's happened, we did have on our bingo cards, Joe. We did. And we're just going to continue in that good spirit and invite someone else into this dialogue, in this conversation we're having. What is a year? Do you know what I mean, Caroline?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This podcast is the Capitol building, and we are the Capitol police, metaphorically letting our guest into the space to talk, to debate, to ratify.
And let's hope no one maces him as he comes in.
He won't get maced. He'll be just fine.
Let's
He'll
open
get
up
walked
the
down
gates. Well, friends and folks, on top of that brilliant metaphor, he is a writer and author, a podcaster. You may know him from The Cozy Robot Show, or formerly of the Lyricist's new book, You're a Miracle and a Pain in the Ass. Give it the hell up for Mike McHarg!
Oh, my God.
He's here. Wow.
I have to be honest. Yes. I've been a guest on a podcast before, maybe even a couple of times.
Oh, a few.
I've never had that much difficulty not just belly laughing into the microphone for the whole entire part of the podcast before I'm allowed to talk. That was really challenging.
What a nice compliment. You know, in a way, Caroline and I are trying to recreate a sensation that we miss so dearly during this time, which is the sensation of church laughter, laughing when you know you're absolutely not supposed to, and then trying to stifle that and hold that in. That's something you don't get just sitting alone in your living room scrolling through
That's
HBO
true.
Max.
There's no one to That's scold true. you know, mm-hmm. except yourself.
Should we start like an Uber service where we can like invite a scold into your home and like...
God, I would be so good at that. Mm-hmm. I have endless scolding.
Oh, you're a regular scoldy hon, my friend, okay? I've always said that about you.
Mike, this feels like a long time coming. It's very exciting. I'm a fan. I have always felt like, you know, we're twin stars dancing in the night, our podcast and your former podcast, just trying to get close to each other. And now it's a supernova. Correct me on that one.
Yeah.
Question?
Mark? This is the end result of climate change, and now we're going to die.
But
a stellar merger can result in a supernova.
Okay.
If the mass of the two stars are sufficient.
I knew he'd be able to make wine out of our water.
Oh,
here
we've got some mass in this star, I'll tell you what.
Okay. Quarantine's been kind to us all. gracious. To me, yeah, it's like in Who Framed Roger Rabbit when Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse finally share the screen together. It's finally that.
It's like if the Suicide Squad and the Avengers finally come together in one incredible film.
Suicide Avengers.
Can you imagine? Oh, that would rock.
That would be wild.
That'd be cool.
Crossing those two universes, continuity.
I love
Ben Affleck is still in it.
Yeah. And
of course.
Ooh, in this one, Batman's superpower is being able to balance a box of Dunkin' Donuts in his arms. There's a movie that came out 5 years ago called Suicide Squad. There's a movie coming out later this summer called The Suicide Squad, which is what a boon for the SEO for years to come.
No.
It's
just
The Suicide. It's
and
not
it's a total
two?
Revamp, like new...
No, no, they're keeping some of the same people. Viola Davis is going to be in it again. There's going to be two Suicide Squad movies starring Viola Davis.
Do you know who Zay Frank is?
No, tell me.
Who's that?
Zay Frank is like the internet's original humorist, really. Kind of helped Tumblr get off the ground. You heard of them. But he did a daily video blog called The Show with Zay Frank before YouTube existed.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was like a big deal. No one had ever done a vlog, especially not a daily vlog. He was like the first person to do that.
Wow.
And then later he did a follow-up in the YouTube era, and he called it A Show with Zay Frank. And so like...
That's funny.
Yeah,
it's that same kind of vibe. Similar. Like, which one am I watching and how do I find it?
Taking a page out of their book. Oh, yeah. Well, Mike, we're so honored and thrilled to have you here. We were discussing off mic before we started the tragedy of our proximity and yet our distance during this time. Because a lot of times it's like, I don't know, you ask people to do the show. Sometimes they're in Santa Monica. Sometimes they're, you know, not in our city or even our county. You're very close to us, we'll say. And it's a true bummer to not welcome you into Caroline's
warm. I think if I reached my arm out the window, I think I would hit
you. Might hit him. Yeah.
Even in like bad traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see.
It's like 20 minutes.
Yeah. Take a little side street.
Tops. It's
yeah.
Great.
Gracious.
It's crazy.
I'm trying to.
If people don't know, in LA, 20 minutes is close.
That's a next door neighbor.
Yeah.
That's a roommate, basically. Yeah.
Basically.
There was a time they said, like, maybe in the early 90s when you could get to anywhere in Los Angeles in 20 minutes. I wonder if it's true, but they say that.
They say that?
Yeah, not literally, like, within the county, but basically it would feel like 20 minutes. There was a time.
Whoa.
In, like, the late 80s, early 90s, it took about 20. And not the case now.
What's going on?
No.
Hard to even imagine.
That's the only part of America I want to make great again. Is the travel
time. Traffic was LA.
Yeah, in LA. Yeah.
Public transit.
I'm trying to figure out like what's the most interesting way to get into your faith story because it's an oft repeated narrative for you. It's something you've talked about before in books and in podcasts and in other media. And I mean, maybe the best place to start is just like, what is it right now? People can check out all the origin story stuff and your faith and then your loss of faith and then regaining it in a different way. But like, what is it now in 2021?
Oh, gosh. It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Weird how?
I mean, like my theology is pretty much indecipherable from atheism and materialism still.
Okay.
Like in my practice, liturgical contemplative Christian, you know how like maybe if you like love one particular mythology so much, it seems just like it might actually be real.
Mm-hmm.
I can be that way with the Marvel universe. I was that way with the Harry Potter universe for a long time before.
I'm like that with
JK
the
Rowling
Bartlett administration.
Into,
I know JK the,
you
really
kind
right.
Of are.
Right. It's like I think I write Christian fan fiction. I think that's really what I do. But it's like I have so much appreciation for that mythology that it's real to me. Mm-hmm. Like I pray and like I read my Bible. And if someone's like, hey, so you believe in the supernatural? I'm like, no, not really at all. and that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. No, it doesn't.
And it doesn't make sense cognitively. It actually makes a ton of sense if you understand the structure of the human brain.
Which Caroline and I, by the way, Caroline and I fully do before you even start.
Right.
Everything you're about to say, we know, but we want to be polite and let you speak on it first.
Sure. Yeah.
when we understand how people have faith experiences, they are not primarily cognitive in origin. The neural networks involved in cognition are not significantly involved in faith experiences. Mm-hmm. But they are very involved in how we articulate our understanding of the world. So mm-hmm. I just let my more intuitive emotional brain have its religion fun. And I don't like scold it for that. And I also don't let my intuitive feeling brain convince me things about physics. Like, I just let physics physics. You know what I mean? And I let biology biology. And I've just kind of let those two things loose in my lived experience. I've given up trying to make myself even internally consistent, because I think that's kind of dishonest. You know, I think if we really pay attention to ourselves, very few people actually have some consistent worldview and ethic and epistemology and all these other kind of boring words we tend to throw around when we talk about these things. Mm-hmm. Most people, my easiest analogy for me, they want to be thin and they want to eat pizza today. That's just kind of the what it means to be a human animal. And I've stopped trying to not be human. And to appreciate that about myself and to feel good about, like, I think that after I die, nothing happens. And I talk to Jesus every day. That's fine.
You do? You pray every day?
I do. I read my Bible every day.
Wow. Now that
I like it. I like, especially now that I'm freed from, like, biblical literalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
in any
make
sense
it
that
sense.
I have to, like, make God be behind all this stuff literally. Yeah. The Bible is a really fascinating library that is, like, helps me metaphorically navigate my daily life in the same way that good modern mythologies and stories do as well. So, and I have so much time investment in that mythology, it seems wasteful to just drop it on the curb. Plus, if I get mad at Franklin Graham on Twitter, it sure is fun to throw scripture at Franklin Graham. I mean,
that's still going.
So, you know, it's just, it's kind of, before the pandemic, I was a pretty regular church attender. I went to a very small Episcopal church. I like the Eucharist. I just like all that stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's fine. But if someone else is like, should I be a Christian? I don't know, and I don't care.
Yeah. Or if the Bible isn't making sense in a particular passage, you don't feel it incumbent to, like, make it make sense and, like, figure that out or align.
I love to study the history of it. I love to, like, I love to geek out on that stuff. Mm-hmm. But if someone's like, well, but the Bible says da da da, I'm like, so what? Like, some dude wrote this, depending on what passage you're talking about, somewhere between 1,000 and 3,500 years ago, mm-hmm. in a different language with a different cultural context. Yeah, it takes some work to make it fit to today, for sure. And you don't want to put too much work on that stuff, or you actually lose what that author was trying to say to an audience they were talking to.
Yeah.
But I've also, as I've gotten older, I like history. I like understanding how this epic tale of humanity got to now. Mm-hmm. And so, for whatever good and whatever bad, the collection of things we call the Bible has played a huge role in human history.
Yeah.
So I think we need to give it its due, and we need to not make a bigger deal of it than it actually is.
You sound pretty unencumbered from some of the turmoil that we often describe on this show, which has to do with, like, oh, how do I make this make sense? And how do I reconcile this and this part of faith and this part of, like, yeah, like, what is ostensibly the lived out theology of materialism or atheism in that sense? You seem pretty free of that.
I feel pretty free. So I think you're describing something that's pretty accurate to my experience. It wasn't easy for me to get there. You know, sometime after or during the time I wrote Finding God in the Waves, I figured out, like, if I keep trying to control this stuff, just making myself miserable, so I'm just going to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I only get so many minutes of life. I don't even know how many. So I'm just going to, like, bring this in to the degree that it helps me enjoy my life, that it helps me have satisfying living. And then sometime after Finding God in the Waves, I figured out, like, I'm in a pretty good place with faith, but I'm not in a great place with mental health and emotional awareness and my ability to relate to other people. So I've got a whole separate set of work to do. So I'm glad I'm not wrestling with this face stuff so I can focus on my PTSD that I didn't know I had. And I can focus on, you know, the kind of culturalized masculinity and whiteness and all these other things I have that are invisible to me that get in the way of my ability to relate to other people. You know, I've just realized, like, the work of getting to know me and be a person that does a better job of meeting people where they are and loving people and being an equitable member of society, that's work that'll never be done. And so anytime I try to master those things or complete myself, I'm just setting myself up to be miserable. When I keep a posture of gratitude to be alive and excitement about learning and growing, those seem to be the times that I thrive the most, am the most fun to be around, when I spread joy to other people. And so I'm always working to get back into that place where I'm holding my ideas loosely, where I'm holding life itself loosely and being just grateful for every moment. And to me, that is the essence of what faith does at its best. And we can use words like epistemology, and they're important. And we can use words like theology, and that's fun. But at the end of the day, to me, the measure of faith is its impact on real life. And that's really the only metric I use to evaluate my faith journey. So there's no purity test, and there's no system I feel there's like no I have to subscribe chart. To. No alignment chart. Although yeah. I do use alignment charts in Dungeons and Dragons, which is somewhat unpopular these days.
Mike, I have to thank you for what you said at the top of this about describing like your cognitive brain and then your sort of like intuitive emotional self too, and how often that disconnect is what you have to like kill either one, you know, in a lot of like faith traditions of like you have to completely deny your soul and your just the weird stuff that bubbles up, the prayers that keep coming to you, you know, if even if you are an atheist, you have to kill that part of yourself, or you have to kill your incredible cognitive brain that is like, this doesn't make sense, or this isn't aligning with what my experience in the world is, or like this doesn't align with science or whatever. And you just said gave me even such a beautiful redefinition of like both, you know, like both. And that's okay, and you don't have to kill either one. And if I'm oversimplifying what you just said a little bit, but like the idea that
I don't think you are
whatever well I'm about to whatever you need to believe that coincides with both like personal development, which you need to have, and just makes you feel good, like which sounds so trite to those of us who grew up in like, you know, feel good faith is not what this is all about. It's like, no, it kind of is, because like you said, we just have one life. And if it's spent like berating myself or being miserable or contorting into something that doesn't feel good, then what are we doing?
That was such an excellent articulation. I don't think it was oversimplified at all. I think that it was clarified. I would add one little thing to feel good faith. There's a reason I say impact on life and not impact on my life.
Yes.
Because we can allow our faith experiences to be insular and self-gratifying and remove us from the accountability of living in the world with other people. So if my faith makes me feel great, but be an asshole to other people, that's not a good faith. If my faith makes me feel morally superior while I behave in racist or sexist or homophobic or ableist ways, that faith has no value. I would even dare say that the fruit of that faith is no good.
Exactly.
So a feel-good faith that also causes flourishing in the lives of people around you, that to me is where the good stuff is.
Yeah. And it allows you to be less of a judgmental person for people who are more spiritual or are more aligned with like a traditional Christianity that maybe we don't feel good about anymore. It's like, but for them, you know, all the assholery aside that may be caused, if it is making them enjoy life and treat others better, then that is also, like you said, like a fruitful expression, even if it's not the one I would choose, you know? And that's to me, that's the definition of a good definition. Applies to all. It works out. Yeah. Mm. And I was just, I think I talked with Kevin about this in another episode recently, but you said this in Will too, and it's something I've been thinking about, which is like, once I freed up so much mental energy of like trying to perfect my faith or my theology or my atheism or whatever it is, I was actually able to engage with the world and try to make it a better place rather than just trying to constantly like work out my own like inner math all the time, you know, which is nice.
Yeah. The thing that I always wonder about, because so many of the people that we talk to, well, I guess there's people in different life stages, but the thing that always felt like a deadline of urgency to have what I've described in conversation with Caroline before as like a holistic, whatever, personal statement of faith or your own personal theology of it. The only urgency I've ever really felt with that is when it comes to having children and like, well, what do I tell, you know, my kids if I were to, you know, in what ways would I raise them? I guess I don't have like a specific vision of how that would work itself out. And not to make your own anecdotal experience prescriptive, but for you, how has that worked itself out in the last few years?
Could I first thank you for that phrase? Not to make your own anecdotal experience prescriptive.
Sure.
You just saved me from having to make that disclaimer myself, and it's so thoughtful, and I just appreciate it. I mean, I've got a ambiguously mainline Christian daughter and an atheist daughter. I'm real proud of both their journeys. We just have fun talking about faith to the degree that the kids are interested in it. They're invited along for any spiritual experiences I'm having. Their attendance is never, ever, ever required. They've both been baptized by their own request when they were younger, one in the Baptist church, the other in the Methodist. And it is hard for me to talk about faith separate from anything else because I don't really have a faith sacred experience that's separate from the rest of how I live my life. So in our house, we just we focus on growth. So we focus on knowing that we're all growing and changing, including mom and dad. Questions are always welcome. Sharing feelings is always encouraged. We not only have conversations about, at the children's request, what happens when we die or what is moral or right or good. We talk about those things a lot at their request. But we also talk about rewriting old patterns, you know? Jenny and I grew up in the Southeast, in the buckle of the Bible Belt as Southern Baptists. We were given profoundly restrictive presentations of gender roles. We were trained in codependent patterns of behavior, and we started to realize that around the time we had pubescent children. And so we've been learning new ways of relating to each other and teaching our children that some of the things we taught them, some of the dynamics that we trained them in aren't actually healthy for them. Mm-hmm. And we got to start unlearning those things together and learning to state our needs clearly and learning to share our feelings more openly and set up family systems interventions around cycles of conflict, especially when the four of us have been trapped in the same four walls together now for coming up on a year. Ooh. And I don't know. I really appreciate how honest and sincere and thoughtful my children are when they talk about faith with me. From the time that they were born, I tried to nourish a trust-based relationship where they knew any thoughts or feelings they had were okay. And as their parent, I was here to advise them as best I could while also setting boundaries for their physical, mental, and emotional safety. And I was going to do my best at that. And as soon as they were kind of emotionally and developmentally ready to know the fact that I make mistakes and am okay discussing those mistakes, we set the floor for that as well. And I feel like that's gone really well. I'm more proud of, even though they have very different spiritual views, Madison, who is 16, 15 or 16, I don't know.
Who cares?
Yeah, who gives a shit?
No, 16, because she turned 16 in the pandemic, and that's a huge deal.
Oh, that stinks. Sweet 16. The pandemic. Oh.
And she had a Zoom call birthday party. Ugh. But she, like, phone banked for the Georgia Senate runoff.
Good grief. Put like, us to shame.
And told me, like, afterwards. She's like, yeah. She's in a room, like, 3 hours. I'm like, hey, kid, what were you doing? She's like, I was phone banking for Georgia. It's like my kids do stuff like that. Like she like organizes protests and calls Congress people and writes draft legislation. And, you know, my kids have a very strong belief that the world will be what we make it and act like that.
Yeah.
And they have a very clear vision. Sometimes I feel a little embarrassed at the limitation of my ambition of how the world could be compared to theirs. And that makes me feel really proud, and it makes me feel like I did a great job modeling spirituality.
Yeah,
what a great time.
Because two dynamic human beings who are determined to make the world a better place and believe that they can, who are both young women. And I mean, you know, that even when I was an evangelical, there was always this tension because I didn't have the language for it, but I've always had this like feminist sensibility, and there was something about the way women were treated in the South that just, oh gosh, it made my skin crawl. Probably because I have an incredibly bright, intelligent, and emotionally present mother. And I would just see, I was like, why is my dad, who's a perfectly wonderful person, why is he held in higher esteem in church and society than this glorious lioness of a human that is my mom? And so when I had children and they were girls, I said, I am not going to let this culture put limitations on their self-imagination. And it seemed to have worked. So that was a really long answer.
No, that was what I was looking for. I think, yeah, pretty much.
Does that give you new ideas, Kevin?
For how I'm going to raise my daughters in 40 years or whenever I have one. 40 would be incredible, by the way, if I pop one out when I'm like 71.
Impressive,
yeah,
even.
The real
question is, what would you do if your daughter brought you a can of beans and a can opener and said she didn't know how to use it?
Oh my God.
That would be a lot of fun.
Okay, perfect.
But
answer.
I will also tell you, it is far more likely for me to take my daughters a can of beans and a can opener and say, I don't know how to use it, than the other way around.
We've talked too much about being dads. We need to talk about being daughters in the
bean
culture.
Bean daughters.
Which, by the way,
the bean
by the time this comes out, this will be a dead talking point, right?
Not for me, Kevin.
Not for you?
Not for me.
Never again. No, the bean dad thing, I will say, like, I'm pretty chill, but the thing that will make my blood boil are poor fatherhood stories. Like, the thing that my, like, identity most rests on is dad. It really is.
Weirdly, that's me, too. I'm just not a dad yet.
So, that story, like, filled me with rage. Because, like, my whole approach to parenting is your questions and curiosity are welcome. Yes, let's do this thing together. If I don't know, we'll figure it out together. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
And that approach, which Bean Dad later claims was a shtick, a comedic personality, and not a depiction of reality, still is gross.
Pretty detailed.
Yeah. I mean, if that's the case, then we need to call Bean Dad Mean Dad. That's not nice to mix stuff up either. Either way.
A liar.
Which then it was so strange after that happened, because then for some reason, Rowan Atkinson the very next day, Mr. Bean, came out railing against cancel culture. It's like he saw Bean trending and it wasn't him. He's like, well,
and his
I
eyes went black.
But it could have been.
I have to, yeah, I'm next.
Man.
Yeah, that really made me mad too, especially when it comes to someone who is hungry. It's like, that is not someone you mess around with.
A child, yes.
Relate that. Yes.
There's too many unknowns.
Wild.
A human being
You've passed the bean test, my friend.
Yes.
It's a low bar.
We are administering a bean test to each of our guests.
To every father.
On GCF. All of our father guests on GCF, we say, what would you do? Oh, man.
That's great.
Gracious. Well, Mike, you said so much so well in such a concise amount of time during this first segment. I kind of don't want to touch it too much. I'm afraid of gilding the bean, if you will. So I think we should just say thank you. And then, yeah, just thank you in general for sharing your insight and wisdom with this stuff. And I think to reflect and echo what Caroline said, I think there'll be many listeners who are also... lack of a better word, blessed by the sort of verbiage and the kind of dichotomies that you set up, or lack of dichotomies in terms of like how faith and emotion and incognition should work. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, Caroline, I got a question for you.
Yes.
How is your social battery right now? Are you feeling drained? Do you got a lot of energy right now? Where are you at with things as we speak today?
Well, you know, when you're pregnant, famously, your social battery is endless, actually, because you're powered by a baby battery.
It's like someone slaps a mag charger onto your phone.
Exactly.
And you can go for like 24 hours more.
I am the U.S. Marines of... taking down social situations. I feel incredible all the time. So yeah, that's where I'm at. What about you?
Wow. Well, I'm feeling a little drained. And sometimes it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, which is maybe the zone I'm in right now. And for me, spreading myself too thin is like going to a lot of like Garfield events recently that have been happening over town.
Oh,
with
yeah.
The new movie coming out.
You get so excited about those. You got to spread those out a little more.
I know. And I need to really protect my energy and stuff. But, you know, it's worth asking ourselves, what's the right amount of socializing and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need a little me time, a little alone, introverted time. But either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So things like tuning into yourself, feeling and understanding what you want and need yourself, and then being able to communicate that to those around you, and then most especially to yourself.
Well, if you can't get pregnant immediately, that sounds like a pretty good solution as a backup.
And again, I think I might have even said this before. If I could get pregnant, I would, just to understand what it's like to have even like boundless energy that can kind of propel me into
to feel as incredible as you could feel.
To exercise more, to be working out like 3 hours a day.
Exactly.
Working 9 hours a day on top of that. And then
good brain.
Going out 2 hours. Yes, such a good brain on top of that. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, maybe give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. If you don't like the first person you get, don't worry, there's another one on the docket. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/goodchristianfun today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
10%?
.com/goodchristianfun. You got some thoughts on that 10%?
That's a good deal.
It is.
I agree. First month?
And especially because 10% is where I'm feeling my battery is right now. That's BetterHelp.com/goodchristianfun.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. It's time once again, but for the first time in 2021, the hunt for the worst Christian song of all time.
The worst!
I'm dancing with
conscience and conviction.
Breaking news. Stephen Kurtz Chapman has taken the Capitol.
Oh, no.
Breaking news. Lauren Daigle has accidentally ridden her bike all the way to Washington, D.C. She has stumbled into the Capitol building. She's accidentally shredding up the electoral votes.
She stumbled into the inauguration and started singing. That would be cool.
Hey, if it was the inauguration this year, that'd be interesting.
They should invite Daigle. I feel like that if he really wants to unite the soul of the nation.
Joe Biden should invite Lauren Daigle.
He should invite Lauren Daigle to come sing.
Via Zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, please, Lauren, stay home.
Yeah. Mike, what is your experience or history with Christian pop culture stuff? This is actually part of your story. I don't know that much.
Yeah, I don't either. The bands, the movies.
The time. It's deep.
Okay.
Let's go.
I wasn't allowed as a child to listen to non-Christian music.
Okay.
So basically the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, I was completely immersed in evangelical pop culture. Completely.
Right in the sweet spot for us.
So, the first concert I ever asked for an autograph was New Song playing at my church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back when they were like just a full on gospel quartet. Like New Song has reinvented themselves many times.
New Song has pivoted Caroline to the Christmas Shoes guys.
Oh yeah, yes. I was wondering. I was like, I know the name, but I can't remember like what their.
They
hit
used
was.
To be like a gospel quartet, and they had this song called "Cold Water Committee" that was like a deep cut, like far into side B of an obscure tape. Uh-huh. And they played a concert at our church. And they opened the thing for requests, and I was so excited, I just shouted out "Cold Water Committee," and like they all looked
they
at
obliged.
Each other, like is that one of our songs?
This is
know.
The song.
Oh my gosh! Saved, born again, and you're so filled with the love of Him, you want to tell everyone just what Christ has done for you, cause you know it's true. You go from house to house.
This is
place to place.
This is a Broadway like
deep cut.
That's why I like it.
It's like a Music Man B-side.
I know you know the words, Mike. Here we go.
Water committee. Yes, I do.
Yes.
Saying no, no. Listen, son, you're getting off to a terrible start.
So this is what you shouted out to them.
I haven't heard this song in 30 years.
Are you like, serious?
Yeah. At least 30. Probably 35.
Welcome home.
That was wild. My brain was like, what is happening? When I requested the song, they didn't remember it was their song. They sung it so few times. And you saw their sound guy like frantically going through these
backing tracks.
Recordings to find the backing track. And then it went on. They're like, oh, yeah. And
oh,
then they sang it.
Oh, they weren't even singing with it? A band. It was just backing tracks
no,
they were singing
they were, to. They were like touring small Baptist churches in the Southeast. I mean, they came to Tallahassee, Florida. They weren't doing that well. So,
well, that's a swing state. You know, I'm sure they were on the campaign trail at that time.
The bigger
now.
Following.
So, you know, I just like... Yeah, I played in a Christian band for years.
No way. Tell us about that. Uh-oh.
You know,
oh,
no. We're a Christian band, and we played a lot of worship music and did a lot of Battle of the Bands, which is a Christian band thing. And
oh, cool.
We did the ones at Atlanta Fest and whatever it's called at Universal Studios.
Are we allowed to ask the name of the band?
I've kept... For my entire public career, I've kept the name of that Ooh. Band under wraps.
Okay.
I understand.
But it's Beneath His Feet is the name Beneath of the band.
A GCF exclusive! Yeah!
Beneath His Feet.
Oh my gosh. Wait, you were in this band for years?
Years.
Years. So did you kind of get a little bit of a following going at all?
A little bit of following, yeah.
Kevin's frantically Googling.
Very little
frantically
bit. The problem is because the age, like, our website was Flash. That was a thing.
Oh,
then.
Yeah.
So it doesn't.
That was like a nice website at
There's
the time.
Probably a couple mentions out there.
Oh my gosh. What was the style of music?
I'm looking.
What was the style of music? We don't fit into any genre.
You can't be categorized, yeah.
Can't
be contained.
Caroline, no, I mean, thinking in terms of genres and styles is small. That's a small picture of what a band can be.
Small-minded of
me. No, it was just weird. It was like, because it was like too many mismatched musical influences converging in a way that was not necessarily always elegant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Marshall stack guitar amps. Mm. And three-part harmony?
Oh, yeah. That
what?
That's what I'm talking about.
A little POD plus new song on there.
That's not a bad description, actually. POD plus new song is probably as close as we could get. So
you're a rock band, but you had too many good singers in this band.
They basically started as like a trio and then added into the band vibe. And yes. I had been playing not Christian music. I'd been playing in like bars mostly. They needed a bass player. And so one of the people in the band was like, hey, would you come play? And I was like, at a church? they're like, yeah. So I did. And it was fun. Some of those guys are still like some of my best friends. But
once you go beneath his feet, you never come up from underneath it. I tell you that much.
It's the puns right themselves, really.
You are part of this culture. You are a part of the history of GCF. And like that's all led to this.
Yeah, that's right.
Ugh.
Mountains of bodies of work.
Does any Christian pop culture exist in your day-to-day life now? Do you still listen, dip your toes back into, speaking of feet, dip your toes back into any of the music in your listening?
0.0 now.
Okay. And
now, the only thing that dips
Hillsong
in is
crying.
I think my favorite thing about the mainline church is its lack of any pop culture intersection. Like, they're like, nope, we have an arcane weird thing. We will not make any attempt to make it modern or relevant. Yeah. Like, yeah.
It's not sweaty. Definitely. It's not thirsty.
Right. No, gosh, no. It's quite the opposite. Very dry.
Yeah, Christian pop culture, I guess you could define as extremely thirsty all the time. Thirsty for souls constantly.
Yes.
Yeah.
As the deer panteth, so do I.
They panteth.
If you tell the deer it can never have a drink of water, it's going to pant.
Yeah, and then the deer's just scrolling on Pornhub at like 2 a.m. at night. Like, come on, no. Man.
Whoa.
Yeah, the deer panteth, okay?
The deer panteth.
The deer not panteth. It's de-panted.
Oh, boy. But the de-pant. Oh, that's disgusting. So, I want someone to illustrate a deer.
Oh, the deer looking at Pornhub was cool.
He was. That's relatable.
But he's wearing pants.
Yes. Yes, he's doing it in a public library.
It's appropriate. Oh, my God.
I didn't get it until now. Thank you for drawing out the bit.
Panted.
Hey, no, if you can count on GCF for one thing, it's to do a bit too long.
Mike, have you ever gotten into the, any of like the Christian comedians or the speakers, the entertainment circuit of CCM?
I couldn't do it. Still can't. When I watch a Christian comedian, I'm like, this is, I don't even think this is actually comedy.
Mm-mm. Well, buddy, like, you're staring at two right now.
I think Kevin has been called a Christian comedian in the news.
No.
Which is so... No. I love it. Man, I'm surprised I haven't brought that up in a while.
Actually. Yeah, I could cut this part out if I really wanted to.
Christian comedian Kevin Porter takes down
Ellen DeGeneres. And famously not Christian comedian. You know what stand-up special I was watching again for the first time in forever? Is Chelsea Peretti's One of the Greats. I think it's my favorite stand-up special.
Oh, so good.
Still.
It's so good.
It check that out. Changed me, solid. I think. It came out in 2013. But the game we're playing today is The Hunt for the Worst Christian Song of All Time. We got two nominees, two contenders for the crown. Maybe you've heard these before, Mike, because you were so involved in a former life. Maybe not. Caroline, I think you might have heard half of one, but you probably forgot it. It doesn't matter.
I probably did.
Caroline Eadley, reliably a blank slate about anything we've ever talked about.
Every day is fresh for me. Every day is new. It's exciting.
Her mercies are new every day, as are her memories.
That's right.
I can relate. Hard relate.
Same, especially this year. But the first nominee in our little game today is a song by the artist Michael W. Smith from his 1999 album, This Is Your Time.
It was a test we could all hope to pass, but none of us would want today.
SATs.
Faced with the choice to deny God and live, for her there was one choice to make. This was a time, this was a dance. She lived every moment, left nothing to chance. She swam in the sea, drank of the deep, embraced the mystery of all she could be.
I'm gonna put the lyrics to this song in the Zoom chat.
You are mourning and grieving your loss. Death died a long time ago. Swallowed in life so the life carries on. Still it's so hard to let go. This was a time, this was a dance. She lived every moment, left nothing to chance. Swam in the sea, drank of the deep, embraced the mystery.
She was Ariel from The Little Mermaid.
Oh, I know what this is. Oh, boy. Oh, no.
If today, faced with the question, oh, what would you say?
I love slow jam Christian drumming. I really do, unironically.
Well, do you like international Christian music? Let me skip to the outro.
Absolute bagpipes.
All right, that is...
All right, you ready for a deep confession? You ready?
Yeah.
I don't know
yeah.
if this fits the spirit of the segment.
Okay.
Safe space.
My biggest fear of coming on Good Christian Fun is we would do a bit about music with someone I knew personally.
And you would be forced to make yet another confession.
And so let me tell you a quick story that I actually think is really important for this moment in history.
Oh, please, wow. Mike, go ahead.
I met Michael W. Smith and his wife, Deborah.
This is my wife.
At Bob Goff's Lodge in Victoria, BC, Canada. So
talk about a moment right there. Wow.
But I did not know who he was because I am face blind and everyone called him Smitty. So I thought Smitty and Deborah were a co-pastoring duo from a small church because they gave off that vibe.
Sure.
And they were lovely. Just the sweetest, kindest people. I felt super weird because here I am like the strange, heretical person at the lodge. And I'm here and I don't know why I'm here. And I just really got along with the two of them. They made me feel really comfortable. And one night during dinner, Smitty starts playing the piano. And I thought, gosh, for a pastor,
it's local.
Pretty good. This guy can play, right? And so
and
I
like,
lean over to Deborah and I'm like,
and
I go, he's really good. And she smiled so sweetly. And then he kept playing. I'm like, no, I was like, I think he could like, he could do session work.
Oh, no.
And then he started singing. And I thought, he sounds just like Michael W. Smith.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
And so I said to Deborah.
No, you didn't.
Smitty sounds just like Michael W. Smith. And she laughed really hard because I still had not made the connection.
Even when you said Smitty sounds like Smith.
I'd still nothing. Just no glimmer of recognition in my mind.
No, buddy.
She never told me. Someone else that later that evening told me.
That's mean.
Because they overheard.
They overheard you say that?
Saying this.
Well, maybe.
And with, you know, like, I'm a very earnest person. Yeah. And so I was genuinely moved by the music. And I meant it complimentarily. Like, Michael,
you were giving him
mega,
a big compliment, megastar. Honestly. Yeah.
So, and I've always had such fond feelings towards them. And I still do. And then I saw he played at that
unfortunately,
gathering in D.C. And I've been so struck because I actually know him to be a sincere and kind and thoughtful person. Mm-hmm. And 4,000 people a day are dying from COVID. And he was either co-opted or actively participated in this big event. And I haven't known what to do with that. My friendship with this man and his participation in this thing that I so deeply oppose. And I want to be really clear. I don't doubt the sincerity of Michael W. Smith's heart or his faith. I think there's a lot of people who cynically exploit conservatives in this country. I think Ted Cruz is probably right near the top of that ticket. Ted Cruz has no beliefs. The man's a nihilist, right? He's just in it for the grift.
Yeah, but have you heard his album, Mike?
That's true. But I'm saying Michael W. Smith, he is a sincere person. So what he is doing is he is a sincere expression of his faith. And I know, like, we have a funny bit about finding the worst Christian song, and I don't want to mess it up. But I mean, there is something in this moment for me of trying to understand what to do with America and Christians in the United States and how we reconcile those things together.
Yeah. Well,
and I know that's really far out of where we're supposed to go.
I was about to transition into this.
Yeah,
actually,
we're all about to remove our clown noses, right?
Yeah.
At the same time. Honk.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think that was beautifully put. Yeah, and I feel like crystallizes the feelings that we have sometimes too with the same people because we make fun of Michael W. Smith, but I have also always gotten a very good vibe from him, you know, and like thought he was seemed like a good, sincere person, like as
he
said.
Fair. I don't mean he's nice and saccharine and artificial.
No.
I mean he's profoundly kind and genuine.
Mm-hmm. While also participating in some clown.
Right.
Himself.
It makes my head spin. Like there's so many people I know who are like that and participate in this thing, and I can't get my head around it. And I think probably there's some people in that movement who look at me and think the same thing. They're like, you know, I know Mike is like a sincere, kind person, but what is it with him and Black Lives Matter? I don't know
as
what
if
to
it's the
do
same
about
at all.
That.
I know what you mean. And
I don't, and I'm not both sidesing. Don't hear
me
wrong.
Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
but just like, how
there's a reason I'm unequivocally
like.
With BLM.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's a reason because I understand the larger institutionalized systemic forces at play. I no longer have that American individual lens with which I view the world. But 70 million people at least do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's a thing here, and that song and that moment and my fear of being like, please. And I literally thought to myself, not a Michael W. Smith song. And as soon as it started to play, I was
well,
like,
let me allay your fears and then also connect it a little bit, because I think it's not disconnected from this song. This is a song called This Is Your Time. It came out in 1999 in the wake of and as a tribute to one of the victims of one of the Columbine, or not one of, the Columbine shooting that happened earlier, to Cassie Bernal. Mm-hmm. And the story that was circulating at the time was one of the shooters said, "Do you believe in the Lord Jesus Christ?" She said, "I do." And then he shot her, which investigators from the FBI, and according to multiple eyewitness accounts, found out ultimately was not true. That being said, there's still sprouted out around it a cottage industry of martyrdom, whatever, merchandise, media, this song. Michael W. Smith co-wrote a book about making this song. Cassie Bernal's mother wrote a book about it. And in fact, one of the shooters did ask another woman that question, and that was a verified account. The woman ended up living, or the young girl, I should say, ended up living. And when she told her account of it as a survivor, people didn't believe her because the Bernal story had already taken
on. They thought
on.
She was like stealing Cassie's.
Yeah, they're like, oh, so you're riding the coattails of this like real martyr that actually died?
Oh my gosh.
So it's this very strange thing, like at the apex of martyr fetishization. And in fact, friend of the show, Alyssa Wilkinson, wrote a wonderful piece about this on Vox.com and how it is connected to the current moment. Not necessarily the martyr complex stuff, but the idea generally, and in the macro sense of Christian culture having a persecution complex and the idea of like, yeah, we're going to get shot. People hate us. People want to kill us. And victimization being a core tenet of Christianity or a core part of the identity for the modern Christian in America, I should say. So it's not disconnected, but it is just why. And especially when it's like it's been disputed. The FBI said this did not happen, these eyewitnesses, but still and still in the books and all this stuff. And it got you know, if you check out like the Wikipedia on it, it was referenced as recently as Rick Santorum was talking about it in 2015. He didn't say her name, he didn't say Cassie Bernal, but just kind of made allusion to 16 years ago this country was inspired by a young woman who faced a gunman in Columbine. That's challenged about her faith and refused to deny God. The woman, the girl lived. It was Val. It wasn't Cassie. Yeah. So
I'm curious how many Christians like to this day know if that's like a myth or not about Cassie, or if it would even, I don't know, like matter that much. But
that's the thing.
Yeah, but it has to, like, the stakes have to be that high. You have to be under threat, and that justifies all the extreme action you do as like an evangelical, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's what, to make a silly comparison, I hope draws the point. It's like when I get weird or when I get annoyed when there's stuff in historical movies or biopics where it's like, wait, that didn't happen. And not even like just the dramatic liberties you have to take for story's sake, but like, wait, no. Freddie Mercury didn't do that. But now it's just history because that's how people experience most of history if they don't really care. It gets calcified. And for generations of people, obviously, it got calcified as that was the story. Mm-hmm. So media representation of these like true life events does matter. And it was such a foundational, like, see, it's video games and violence in the media, and that's what leads the kids, and they want to gun down Christians and just... Yeah, it's like real messy. And especially
I remember it as just, sorry, finish your thought and then I'll
I was going to say it's interesting to compare 1999 to maybe what the same coalition of people would say in 2021 as far as it pertains to violence and about the relative indifference now to violence, where it's like X amount of kids getting gunned down in Columbine was like literally the worst thing that ever happened to the country. And now, like Mike said, 4,000 people dying a day or 4 people dying at the Capitol. It's like, it's the cost of doing business. And look, we're all going to die and I'm ready to die for my country. And it's like, there's been a nihilistic turn taken by that core coalition of the country, including maybe Michael W. Smith. I don't know. But yes, he did participate in events like that. I'm not sure. So that's one song. What were you going to say, Caroline?
What was I going to say? Oh, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to drag it out. But I was just thinking, like, when I was, a teen and stuff, and we were told about this story, it was mostly a way to, like, at least for my peers, to, like, mobilize the youth, too, into really, being fervent in our faith and, like, to that level and whipping us up into, like, a true fear that, like, someday we may be asked. And we may die for it over this like simple question.
The lyric,
like, I legit thought that was going to happen or was likely to happen.
Right.
To me,
well, because the lyric in this song is, "What if tomorrow? What if today? Faced with the question, oh, what would you say?" So it was kind of gearing up people low key of like, You will have to answer with a gun to your head if you're a Christian.
Yeah, and it wasn't like, oh, as you as the youth, how will you reform the society so this doesn't happen, you know, or that you're safe, or this would never even happen to you. You know, it was just more of like, do you believe in God enough, you know, or would you deny Christ in that moment kind of thing. It was turned into just like this Peter story instead of like, this is scary.
Now instead, Smitty could have wrote a song like, more regulations make it harder to own.
Common sense reform.
Not necessarily defund, but not defund.
There's a long time before that song came out, I had the martyr fantasies.
Yeah. You know? Really?
I mean, when I was probably, my martyr fantasies probably started when I was 9 or 10, based on how much revelation teaching they did at my church.
Mm-hmm.
And in like middle school youth group, it was like, we're doing another end of the world study. Oh, okay. It's a good thing for me to learn about when I'm 9.
I can handle this.
I'm totally ready for this. And the troops from the government are going to come put our head guns to our head and ask if we believe in Jesus or not. We said, no, they're going to kill us. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't wait to die for Jesus. You know, I remember the first time I went to a protest march in San Diego in a direct action against ICE. And I remember thinking, like, I'm ready to die for this cause. And then I later realized, I'm like, oh, why am I always so ready to die for a cause?
Yeah.
It all goes back to the childhood.
There we go.
All in there. Yeah.
Yes.
That is insane. Yeah.
I didn't have any martyr fantasies, but after watching Back to the Future, I had some Marty fantasies.
All right.
Who did it?
Listen, we all wanted to be good on skateboard.
The second
hoverboard.
Hoverboard.
2021. The second song that we're here to listen to is a song by a group we haven't covered yet. Maybe Mike's heard of them, given his
or knows them.
This is what happens when we get guests that are like from the big leagues. They're like, yeah, I actually know these people and I've spent like quality time with them. So it's
Amy Grant's my godmother. I can't really speak to this in any meaningful way, but have at it, kids.
Chapman and I are business partners.
So Carman is my spiritual advisor.
In that case, Mike, we do need to talk to you because that I think we will need to intervene. Ooh, you know, we don't know you that well, but listen.
This group.
What is Carman up to? Yeah, we probably shouldn't ask.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't ask. Don't tell.
You need to turn that stone over.
That's not a stone I want to wish upon.
No, I don't.
This song is a song by the group ETW, which stands for End Time Warriors. It's... It's a group that first formed.
Are you familiar
formed...
with them, Mike, personally? Okay, great. Mm-mm.
Okay, so you can
never heard of them.
They're a group that formed at Oral Roberts University. It's a
telling a story.
It's a hip hop R&B trio called ETW, and they put out a little song called. Well, I won't spoil the title. Actually.
You tired of being defeated? Yeah. You tired of being all under the circumstances? Yeah. Are you tired of paying the cost? Just to find out you already lost. Yeah, yeah. Have you done anything about it? Satan, you're canceled.
Satan, you're canceled.
I love this song, so I'm.
That you have forgotten, we got winning on our minds, and we're not stopping. You're lying, stealing, stretching the truth, and trying to destroy and ruin the youth. But to your surprise, we got our armor on, and we'll be fasting and praying till the break of dawn. Satan, you canceled. Satan, you canceled. Satan, you canceled.
Are they endorsing cancel culture?
Oh, yeah. Forerunners.
Against the mighty hand of God, haven't you heard the score? You're defeated, depleted. Cold busted on ice. The army guys on you like Miami Vice. You've been lying and conniving for much too long. You've been running around the world perpetrating the fraud. You've been telling everybody how you were God. But now I'm here to let you know we're pulling your card. Satan, you're canceled.
Yeah. Satan, I bet you wish you hadn't have thought you were bad. I bet you think a lot now about the things you had. You were God's favorite cherub. Your life wasn't hard, but you had to get cocky and try to play.
It's got like a early to mid-90s hip-hop vibe.
Absolutely.
Like,
from 1989. The song is as old as I am.
Okay, if it was from 89, it sounds contemporary. It didn't do the Christian culture thing where it lagged the sound outside of the non-Christian part of the genre.
Well, the whole bottom line of the whole fact is that Satan's cancer. Ain't much more you can say about that.
So much for the sex.
I mean, the kick kicks. Right amount of reverb on the snare. I don't know. This one, pretty good song.
Generation, the cream of the crop. Satan,
get canceled.
I mean, the lyrics are ridiculous.
It's so sassy.
Oh, you guys, I just checked Twitter and Satan posted a notes app.
I knew you were going to say that. So a lot of people.
Saying, I'm listening and learning.
It's come to my attention that some past acts as Lucifer have offended some. It's time for me to step back and listen, y'all.
I'm sorry if you've been hurt by what I did.
Ooh, yeah, that's the worst.
This rocks. I want to redo it for everything that could be canceled.
As a privileged cisgender Satan, I know that it's my time to live it.
I misunderstood. I thought we were looking for the worst Christian song, not the best Christian song.
Yeah, Kevin, I think you messed this up.
Yeah, I might have stacked the deck a little bit. Sometimes this game is find the worst Christian song of all time. Sometimes it's, hey, can we just play two songs and listen to them?
Of the two, I like that one better.
Well, and they really were prophets in this sense with the cancel culture, right?
Really, yeah, I know. Maybe this has been in the lexicon a lot earlier than we all thought.
And if you're asking yourself, did the lyrics already exist on the web? The answer is no, they did not. And if you're asking, did I have to frickin' transcribe them from listening to the song a few times? You bet I did.
You typed this out?
I had to type out, yo, Satan, I bet you thought you would win the war against the mighty hand of God. Haven't you heard the score? You're defeated, depleted, cold, yo, busted Satan. On ice. The army of God is on you like Miami Vice.
Okay, these lyrics are so good. I'm glad. You should publish these to the internet just so that the record is there.
Yes.
As a because community
you
service.
Had a third of angels, but you lost anyway. Amazing. So fun.
I want to read this from the CCM Encyclopedia, checking in with our friend Mark Allen Powell, who said, the rap trio ETW formed at Oral Roberts University alongside, you know, Joel Osteen and Oral Roberts, a bunch of people came out. Oral Roberts, shouts out to Tulsa. In 1985, to compete in a local talent contest, their debut release focused a bit too heavily on religious put-downs of the culture, intended to come off as judgmental and sloganeering. And their big breakout hit was a cover of Let's Stay Together by the Reverend Al Green, excuse me.
Oh.
But yes, so that's ETW. Their last album was 1997, so not too contemporary. A little older than some of the stuff we're used to on the show. Not putting out great Soul Cycle soundtracks like Smitty is. still doing.
You gotta run as fast as you can.
Run! Yes, sorry, it's your time.
It's your pal.
Yeah, sorry. You're a good close personal friend.
My bad.
So, gang, which is the worst song?
I don't know about you all, but for me, it's going to have to be, I don't even know the title of the first,
This is Your Time.
What is that one called? This Is Your Time. Yeah, for me, that's going to be the worst one.
Why?
I don't know. I just get like a feeling.
You don't love the bagpipes at the end?
The bagpipe, well, okay, now I'm back on board.
Okay, see?
The bagpipes
I am a sucker for
because
bagpipes.
That does remind me every once in a while that like Mikey W. Smith is like a big orchestration fan. Like he loves
composing. He's very talented.
Classical music as well. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. He likes arrangement. And so I imagine the bagpipe for him was like a dream, a pipe dream, if you will.
Okay. Also, bagpipes very in with Christians in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I say that.
Oh, yeah.
I think because, I think in certain songs and then maybe just in some just general contemporary music, but I think of two Christian approved movies. One is Braveheart, one is Lord of the Rings trilogy. Christians, young male Christians, love these movies.
Bagpipe especially equals inspiration.
And those are heavily bagpipe influenced, obviously. The Braveheart theme and then, you know, the Lord of the Rings theme as well. So, Mike, what say you? Which is the worst song? You're not in a strange position right now, are you?
ETW slaps. I'm sorry. I just liked it. There's no worst part of that song except maybe the lyrical composition, I would agree, is a tad forced.
You think you built your kingdom on God's green earth and now you're trying to take away what God has given, but one thing you've forgotten is we've got winning on our minds and we're not stopping. You don't love those lyrics?
I don't love the... the beat. I love the rhythm. I even love the vocal tone of the performer. Plural.
Yeah.
But yeah, the worst of the two is This Is Our Time.
I miss this era of hip-hop. Well, we're having a time, and we're having a rap, and we're going to take a little bitty tiny, tiny, tiny nap, and we're da da da. Yeah.
I do, too.
Yes.
Smitty, you canceled.
Smitty, you canceled.
Y'all are too witty.
You canceled.
Oh yeah,
I like that.
ETW's better. Okay, well, let's call this the hunt for the best Christian song of all time, and I give it to ETW. Satan, you're canceled. Thank you for giving us the cancel culture
Hunting.
That would one day make Mr. Bean and a bunch of other like like men, white men in their 60s, kind of losing their mind over the idea
medium
of consequences.
Medium-talented men make them
yeah, right.
Furious.
Mr. Bean is very talented. Did you even see Rat Race?
Oh, excuse me.
It never does anything.
I know.
That, no, like, what's this cancel culture? You mean someone has like a stressful 2 days on Twitter?
And then you will always
still
get
has
a job.
Millions of dollars? Yes. Like, what are you?
Mel Gibson came out with like 3 movies this year. He's making a Passion of the Christ sequel that's coming out. I'm not kidding. Later this year.
A sequel?
Yes. Like, even more passionate, Christ harder. I don't know.
The passion refers to a specific part of.
Yeah, but this one's like, well, what was Mary doing that dance?
Passion of the Christ, Tokyo Drift.
Passion of the Christ, Rise of the Machines.
I would watch that. Okay, you want to get me in a... I never saw the original, by the way.
Oh, wow.
But,
yeah.
Don't recommend.
Yeah, would not.
If it was Tokyo Drift, Passion of the Christ, I would be in.
Something,
Like, in the pandemic, I'd go to a theater.
Passion of the Christ, 1984.
I would break quarantine for this.
You would break quarantine for this. That's what
Passion
we're doing.
Passion of the Christ, 1984.
Vax or no vax, we're breaking quarantine for Passion of the Christ.
Only if they did it accurately,
yeah.
Where Jesus of Nazareth appears in 1984.
Yes.
And is confused, bewildered, and terrified.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
and
just
unable
more of like
to communicate
a story of
with
him
anyone.
Trying to find out what the modern world is all about.
He's screaming and everything, just like, ah! I'm God. I didn't even see this coming, okay? That would rule. Well, you, the listener, can also vote on which you think is the best / worst Christian song of all time. Go to @ChristianFunPod. Get out there and
Pokemon, go to the polls.
We did it. We did it, Joe.
Man.
Oh. We did it.
Two of my favorite ladies, back to back. They
we
should
did
like
do it.
They should have a podcast. Wait,
they should collab.
Should Kamala Harris be the first sitting vice president to host a podcast?
If she's
it's
got
crazy
time.
That presidents haven't had podcasts yet.
I
or
think
at least some of the cabinet members.
I think it's coming. It's definitely ooh, Buttigieg and all these like Clinton has a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And freaking Meghan Markle has one. It's coming. The president's getting
on the
podcast.
Way.
And it's called Cotton Eye Joe or whatever.
Joe, I would rebrand right off the bat.
No malarkey zone.
Okay. Can you believe that was an actual presidential campaign slogan?
I can't believe it.
It's something he muttered under his breath, and then and then they were like, well, we have to make this the slogan.
He of was the born in like World War I, you know, so I guess it makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, he, well, I don't know if you heard this, Joe Biden watched the first Wonder Woman. He's like, that's not how it was.
He's like, right. I finally feel seen.
Representation matters. Okay, time to bring it down. Time to dim the lights and turn the scents up, light the candles up in here. Mike, on this show, unlike other shows where you may plug your projects and promote yourselves, we're not here to do that. We're here to lift it up to the Lord. And by lift it up, I mean plug your projects and promote your social media handles. And we start, as per usual, with Caroline Ely, attorney at law.
Esquire, lift me up.
You love Esquire.
Caroline Sports. And I'm going to lift up a show I watched briefly called The Repair Shop on Netflix. It's like British Bake Off, but they just repair like old family heirlooms and antiques. And it's very sweet. And there's just like a little workshop. And there's like a guy who's really good with wood repair and a guy that's really good with paintings and a guy that just does clocks. And it's just adorable. It's very sweet. If you want a nice like passive TV experience, I recommend it.
Okay. What's it called again? Give us that name again.
The Repair Shop.
The Repair Shop. Thank you, Caroline. We'll turn it to Mike.
I'm at Mike McCarg basically everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't spell that, you can do at Cozy Robots some places.
Hell yeah.
Or CozyRobots.com. And a show I really enjoyed was The Queen's Gambit on Netflix, because I like that we got a fantasy piece set in the 60s where patriarchy wasn't brutal and oppressive and men weren't creepy.
Exactly.
And it was really fun to watch what people could have been like but weren't.
That's it is a fantasy.
Way to put it. Yeah.
But it's fun.
That entire show, I kept tensing up like every time someone was like trying to get in her business, and then they ended up just being supportive and respectful.
I kind of wish they would have tipped it a little bit that it does take place in an alternate universe where it's like the show exists, but then you see like floating cars in the background every so often.
Right.
It's like,
a bigger tell.
Yeah, this
or
is
like Katharine Hepburn is president.
That would be cool. Queen's Gambit. Oh, yeah. And then
Amen.
Cozy Robot. What a great show.
We've had a lot of fun.
Yeah. Totally, yes.
Is there a Mrs. Cozy Robot? No, I'm just kidding. There is.
There is. Very much is. Our 20th wedding anniversary was the 30th.
Wow.
Congrats. So, oh, my gosh.
You did it, Joe. Wait, you got married on December the 30th. Mm-hmm. Wow.
2000.
Okay, so like 5 days after Christmas. This is. I've heard of people doing like New Year's Eve weddings. I've never heard of a December 30th wedding.
We thought like if we did it then, the church would still have Christmas decorations up.
Oh, that's
and it would,
nice.
The wedding would cost less.
That is genius.
So that was part of the rationale. And I will say it, we had a remarkably fiscally efficient wedding.
And I bet the lighting was beautiful.
It was beautiful.
That's what we liked
to hear. And then to decorate the reception hall, my dad drove around town and got the Christmas trees everyone had thrown on the curb. And my mother-in-law sprayed them with that fake snow and then lit
serious?
Them. And it was like this beautiful winter forest
for
nothing
gosh.
But our time.
Wow. That is so smart. That is so smart. Just go get those free trees.
GCF listeners, mark your calendars. December 30th, 2026. KTP wedding. Doesn't matter to
26.
Who. Doesn't matter to what. It's happening, baby. Shoot my shot.
Let's manifest it.
I like that you gave yourself a good runway, though.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to overshoot it. I've gotten too foolish with saying this year's my year. I'm saying 2026 is my year.
5 years.
Yeah, 5 years from now is my year.
Well, that gives Elmo plenty of time to prepare.
Okay.
And, like, design the invites and stuff.
No, that's not. I'm not marrying Elmo. I know he's not real. I do know he's not real. I do know he's not real.
Do know.
You can lift me up at Kevin T. Port everywhere, or at Kevin Bacon Shop some places, and get some sweets and treats in the Los Angeles County. People have been buying some recently. It's been very nice and fun to see other parts of Los Angeles County that I would have zero opportunity to see otherwise when delivering stuff to people. And just to get the heck out of the apartment in a safe way. Keep the little masky on the whole time. I should get a branded mask for it, right?
You should make a mask out of cookie.
Caroline, I don't think Dr. Fauci would
that.
Like
will that. Filter. There is no air passing through that sucker. It's delicious.
Well, it's safe, but you'll also die.
You're just being smothered.
Can't get COVID if you're dead.
That's
if you
right. can't breathe.
Hey, which is a strategy a lot of people have taken, unfortunately.
Sadly.
Very sadly. What do I have to plug? Nothing to plug. I won't lift anything.
Nothing
up.
Fun.
I haven't experienced anything in the cult. I could lift up Ethan a movie Hawk I haven't movies. Watched yet. What do you mean?
Oh, there you go. You wouldn't lift up a certain DC movie that you just watched, anything like that?
I'll lift up Captain America, The Winter Soldier, a movie that DC Pearson was in, our friend of the show and friend. He played the Apple Store guy. You can lift us up at Christian Fun Pod everywhere. Go to patreon.com/goodchristianfun for more good Christian fun. And you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Every review you leave, we donate $1 to charity. And this month's charity is the SELA, Homeless Neighborhood Coalition. Mike, it's been a long time coming. Thank you so much for joining us tonight,
sir. This was
sir.
Everything I dreamed it would be and more.
What
I'm so excited.
Delight.
What a treat.
Come back anytime you want.
I sincerely enjoyed it and really appreciate the chance to be here.
Open door invitation anytime, every time. Just don't even tell us. We'll just give you the Zoom code every night. And you can bomb us.
You pop in. That would actually be really cool.
That would be delightful. What if we start doing
especially
that?
If you have like another guest and it's awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give you the. Like,
I didn't. Hey. Sorry.
Hey, can you stop the podcast you're on real quick and just pop in this one here?
I'll give you the Zoom links to my therapy session. See what happens there. Not tell you which is which.
It's like he finally fixes Kevin. Get out.
What if we did that? We booked someone for the podcast, but it's just me doing one-on-one therapy with someone. It's like, is this the show? Is that a guest? No, it's not.
My turn yet?
There's nothing left to say except when Off Pod's people said amen. Let's go out.
You canceled.
And a woman.
You canceled. A woman.
You
canceled. Okay, let's go out with Satan, You're Canceled, the greatest Christian song of all time, I guess. We just need to hear it one more time.
Nobody can chair dance like an all-Caucasian podcast.
Oh, God. I am humiliated.
Are you okay, Caroline?
Just like cut me right to my core.
Wow. All right, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye. You're trying to take away what God has given, but one thing that you have forgotten, we got winning on our mind. That was a HeadGum podcast.